Hello, I'm Seth Dello, and today I've come to an allotment in South Somerset, a fitting location to conduct an interview for the Marshwood Vale magazine. In recent years, and certainly recent months, gardening has grown in popularity and interest thanks to the beneficial effect it has on mental health and well-being. Numerous articles exist both in print and online which support this, with gardening adapting at an exciting time for pioneering mental health initiatives. Organisations such as the RHS and Mind have backed the strong connection behind gardening and mental health, promoting the benefits and its related activities. Even the science community is involved, conducting small and large-scale research projects to explore the link further. With me to discuss this today, on her own allotment, is Cathy Crouch, who is a lifelong gardener with over 21 years of garden consultancy and professional experience. Among her achievements include BBC Gardener of the Decade, BBC Gardener of the Year, and Gold Medal winner at the Chelsea Flower Show. Over 30 years of experience is rather impressive. Why did you take up gardening in the first place?
Well, my family all gardened. My mum and dad had lovely house and big gardens every weekend if it wasn't raining, which it did a lot in the Lake District. But they'd be out there doing it. It was just sort of what we did. My grandma's gardened, auntie's gardened. And I was it was so normal. I was quite surprised when I'd go past somebody's garden and it was completely disorganised or overgrown. I'd think, God, what's wrong with them? Why isn't there any gardening done?
What benefits do you get out of gardening and why is it so important to you?
Oh, it just keeps me connected with real life. The passing of the seasons, the exercise, the fresh air, beautiful flowers, somewhere to sit in with my friends. I get food, produce, so many benefits. Again, I struggle to understand why some people actively don't like gardening.
You would have worked with a real variety of people over the years. Have any people you know used gardening to their advantage to improve their own mental health?
I think every gardener would do that as a matter of course, although there are things about sensory gardens and mindfulness gardens and all that sort of stuff. I think every nice garden will appeal to the sense of the scent of the flowers, the sound of the wind and the birds and the feel of the soil and the sun on your face. How could any garden not enhance your health if it was done right? And we're sitting in my allotment and looking around a lovely part of Somerset and I've got vegetables and flowers and all sorts of nice things. But it also teaches you realism. There will be failures. There will be rabbits come and eat your produce. There will be slugs chewing at everything. There's a cabbage white butterfly with designs on my cabbages. So it just teaches you patience, that not everything will go right, that you have to put some effort in, hard work. And it saddens me that people will say, oh, you know, garden is very expensive. I'd love to do more of it, but can't afford it. You can do a whole garden for 3 packets of seeds.
It's a cheap alternative, really, isn't it, to going into the supermarkets and getting what you want. And I suppose the enjoyment out of growing your own thing is better than getting it off the shelf, isn't it?
Oh, it is, although I came here first thing this morning because, of course, beginning of August, it's 1st of August today, and this is the time of year that stuff is growing faster than you can eat it. So although I've got the sheer delight of having 2 or 3 trugs of vegetables at home, I've got potatoes, onions, I've got carrots in the ground, I've got courgettes growing like crazy, broad beans, runner beans. Well, that's all very, very well and good. You can't say it pays, you know, by the hour that I've spent on it. Well, you just have to think of it as going to the gym, but you get vegetables as well.
Gardening is a unique activity, as it's something that engages both the mind, the body and the senses, which I'm sure most listeners will have found out during the lockdown. One of the obvious benefits is the exercise that one participates in when out in the garden. But even living within view of green spaces can create a better sustained mental well-being, highlighted by an interesting University of Exeter study in 2014. It is evident that the senses play an important part in heightening our experience of gardening and the positive impact it can have on our mental well-being. How has gardening impacted your experience of the lockdown?
As soon as we got into lockdown, we were right at the beginning of the growing season for the gardener's year. And March, April, May and June are the busiest seasons if you're growing produce. And because I hadn't had much holiday last year when I was looking after my mum in her latter months, I thought, you know what, this will be the time to have a bit of a holiday myself. So I lost no time in shooting straight up the allotment, thinking this is the year I'm going to get it absolutely up to order. And I know a lot of other gardeners said, well, blow the housework. We're going to spend all our time in the allotment. And the work that I've done now, if I keep on top of it, that will last me in years to come. I feel so sorry for people in an urban place. They couldn't go out. They're told to stay indoors by people who have lovely big houses and gardens in the government. And they didn't know the misery of living in a flat with three small children and the park outside is closed. And I felt so blessed that I can come to the most beautiful part of Somerset with 17 metres by 17 metres all on my own, self-isolation, no problem at all, door-to-door in my car, not interacting with everyone.
And I must say, it does look very good what you've done. The colours here today are fantastic.
Well, I do like growing some flowers because, of course, nearly all produce vegetables are sort of green, green and green with the odd red runner bean flower and so on. But I've got marigolds and gladioli, dahlias, cornflowers, sweet peas, and it's just so nice to just cut a little bunch of flowers and stick them in the vase on the kitchen windowsill, and it just enhances the spirit. We are attuned to bright colours. We look at the butterflies' wings and the kingfisher and the poppies. Our whole world is sort of grey skies and green grass and brown soil and trees. And I think from the dawn of mankind, we loved bright colours. We collect little jewellery stones and took a great delight in little flowers.
Are you surprised that gardening has experienced something of a revival during this lockdown period?
Not surprised at all, because so many people have a little patch of ground and thought, right, this is the opportunity to get it together. And gardening is a bit of a myth that people say, oh, it's just for old people. It's not that people take up gardening in their old age. It's that they've been gardening all their lives, in between looking after kids and having to work. And it's only once the kids have grown up and they retire, they think, great, we can now do more gardening. Unfortunately, that's just the point. The poor old body's starting to give over. So it is a bit of a mixed blessing. But no, everybody I knew was a gardener. Instant lockdown, yes, please, I'll be straight into the garden. And it's such a shame that the government shut down garden centres at the point when they get 80% of their revenue from that quarter of the year. And you could go to a supermarket, but not a garden centre. And yet the garden centre was the perfect retail outlet for isolation and self-distancing kind of shopping, which they've finally got round to. And they're going daft trying to recoup the business that was lost in spring.
In regard to the senses, could you suggest any particular plants that would make a garden more stimulating for those living with mental illnesses or even those who have a disability or long-term health condition?
I think any of the disabilities or health conditions result in a level of stress and higher anxiety about the situation you're in. And so many people, whether they're young and not knowing where they're going in life, especially this year, older people who are in pain with a disability, it raises the cortisol levels and makes you very upset. And the garden is wonderful for having a sort of mindfulness ability for you to just sit and look. So you've got the site, and I'm looking over there at some beautiful marigolds, yellow and orange, and some blue and maroon cornflowers. And you just look at that and think, how pretty. And then I can hear the wind just gently rustling in the foliage. And there's my dog barking, having a lovely time, enjoying his senses of feeling the grass on his back as he rolls around, having a nice time. We can hear the birds twittering in the sky. And actually, it's such a treat. Listen. Nothing. How often do we get to hear quietly nothing? Isn't that beautiful? Sometimes hearing nothing instead of this cacophony of noise and people telling you what to just sit and be mindful. You've got the smell, beautiful herbs, pinch and sniff herbs like rosemary and lavender that don't waft at you. And taste, of course, I'm cooking food. And the difference in taste between something I've just picked compared to something that at the supermarket at the very best will have been picked and put in the packing shed, that's one day. One day at the wholesale market, one day at the supermarkets, it's 3 days old, even though it's been perfectly cleaned and refrigerated, the flavour goes. You know, the mini sweet corn. Well, I find they actually don't really taste of much. But the sweet corn that I have is almost like you've put sugar on it. You wouldn't believe the flavour. And then when I'm cooking in the winter, I'm going to have sacks of potatoes and strings of onions and parsnips, leeks. So all those lovely flavours and the smell of cooking. How nice is it to come home on a miserable wet day and in your slow cooker you can smell the stew that you've had burbling all the way and you just add some green vegetables. How nice is that? But it's nicer when you've grown it and cooked it yourself.
One policy initiative in recent years that has been extensively trialled and developed is called social prescribing. This is, according to the University of Oxford, an alternative to clinical interventions by linking people to support in their local community. This initiative provides support to people who have mental health issues, but even extends to those who are lonely or isolated, who have complex social needs or long-term health conditions. Not only does this reduce pressure on local services, it also allows valuable charity, voluntary and community sectors to give their much valued support to those referred. Since January 2019, the NHS have included social prescribing in their long-term plan. So, Cathy, how beneficial do you think the initiative of social prescribing is for improving mental health?
I think it's absolutely wonderful. If you were a peasant 200 years ago, you would have spent all your time outdoors working. You'd have only come home for eating, sleeping and changing your clothes. And now our lives are so artificial, being cooped up in houses with small children all day, with being in offices staring at a screen all day, being very immobile for work. We're not the agricultural economy that we used to be. 200 years ago, 97% of the population were directly or indirectly involved with agriculture. Now only 3% are and 97% aren't, which is a great disconnection. And it's just got to be a push towards people that don't have the opportunities to go outdoors, to ride a bike, to enjoy a garden, to be sociable with people outdoors, to be in connection with the planet, to know where your food comes from, to just walk to the top of the hill and back. It's a shame that we've got to the point where we have to prescribe it as a medical thing instead of it being part of our daily routine.
So do you think we're going in the right direction?
Well, when you're at the start of a journey, you have, first of all, the intention that you're going to travel. But you don't know if you've read the map correctly, if you're going in the right direction at the right speed, or whether you'll get there, or whether you'll be welcome when you get there. So I think to be prescribing, joining walking groups and cycling or gardening as therapy is all a good thing. The intention is there, and there's some talk that the funding will follow. I think there was a talk with the government they would be possibly considering doing a £50 grant to renovate and restore and maintain an old bike so you can get out without very much expense at all. And it's like having the intention that we're going to lose weight and get fit and diet. Well, I've had that intention for 20 years and oddly enough, I'm exactly the same shape and size as I was 10 years ago. How funny is that? So intention really has to be followed by action and repetition. It's no good going for one walk. You've got to do it three times a week for the rest of your life. And that's the tough bit when you have work and family commitments.
A trialled initiative which has been positively received is called Green Therapy, which, for example, includes communal gardening on a patch of land run by a voluntary organisation. How valuable do you think it is to garden alongside other people?
It's wonderful. I absolutely love it, although I'm a bit of a dictator on my own allotment and sometimes gardening by committee has its own pitfalls. To have a mate with me who's giving a hand and say, oh, look at this, we've got some fruit here, and oh, let's pick this and make some jam, and you've got this banter back and forth on how the garden's doing. As I said before, we're not meant to be isolated people. We should be communicating, and we don't always get the chance to do it with either with family or we're at work when you've got to kowtow and do what the boss in the system tells you to do. But when you're just outdoors with a common purpose and a benefit at the end and all the lovely things of running the hands through your soil and picking new vegetables, again, that's why I'm a gardener. And now they're prescribing what I do as a lifestyle to everyone else. So, yeah, let's do it.
Now, you may have been listening to this and thinking, I only have a small garden, or perhaps you don't even have a garden at all if you live in an urban area. Obviously, the size of our gardens varies, with some having great swathes of greenery and others only a small windowsill. What advice would you give to people who only have small or in some circumstances virtually no garden at all?
When I was a student in Glasgow, the very first thing I did was to buy myself some herbs in pots to make my nice herby pasta. And you've got the smell, you've got edibility, they're easy to look after. And then there was a tiny little close in the bottom, which is a back courtyard, and there was a tiny little border. And it was probably only 6 feet long and 2 feet wide. And for very little money, I filled it with some flowers, just seeds like Mr. Nasturtiums. And the bees and butterflies came in that had never been there before. It was beautiful and colourful. If you only have a small garden, there's every chance it's because you're in a small house and you can't afford a bigger one, so you've got a small budget. But the things you can do, and I'm now in my garden, which isn't very big by old cottage standards, but probably reasonable size by modern standards. And I've been doing it the old-fashioned way, as my grandma did. You grow things from seed. You learn the art of leaning your elbow over somebody's garden fence and you get to know them and then sucker them in by saying, oh, that's a nice plant, and wait for them to fall into the trap of saying, oh, would you like me to take a cutting for you? I'll divide you off a bit or save the seed. And you can buy things from seed. You can buy little starter plants. Instead of a big one in a 2 or 3 litre pot, you can buy one in a 9 centimetre pot. And a plant that you plant for £2.50 this year becomes the size of one that you would pay £7.99 for in a year to 18 months. Now, can you put £2.50 in a savings account and get £8 out next year? I don't think so. So growing plants is the best investment ever. In a small garden also, it's very difficult to have every single thing you want in a garden if it's not to look like a mess. So my garden has a shed for storage, a seat for sitting. It's got vegetables, it's got my seedling raising patch, it's got flowers, it's got a raised herb bed, it's got a shade area. So I'm freely admitting that it is too chaotic at the moment. Some plants that don't like it because it's too dry or too shaded will quietly die off. But I didn't spend much money on them, so it's no great loss. The things that do enjoy it will multiply and spread. So in a year or two, I will have the same amount of greenery, but half the number of species at twice the size, and it'll look a lot more relaxed. Look at small gardens nearby, and if you find a beautiful one that's really pretty and to your taste, honestly, if you go and knock on the door and say, excuse me for bothering you, but I really love your garden, can you tell me what that plant is there? Most of the time, gardeners are lovely people. We like to share our successes. And they say, oh yeah, it's such and such a plant, and I got it so-and-so, and it was only that big, but I have to do this to it every year, and deadhead it or prune it. And that's how you learn to be a gardener, by asking people and being analytical about what you want and what you don't want.
There are many organisations in our local area which exist to enable people to get outside and to be immersed in the gardening experience. Organisations such as the National Allotment Society allow you to locate and participate in your nearest local allotment with a regional southwest arm. More generally, the charity Thrive exists to support individuals with disabilities, mental health conditions, or who are feeling lonely to continue gardening. We've also found that there are gardening clubs, such as the Somerset Federation of Gardening Clubs. There's things that exist, like Dorset Federation of Horticultural Societies. Ultimately, the work of charitable organisations is making social and therapeutic horticulture more accessible than ever before. Kathy, as a gardener, what would your advice be to people who would like to access the services of charitable organisations?
I would say go on the internet. Just about everybody under the age of 70 certainly has access to the internet, and those over 70 have certainly got family that will have the internet. And simply Google garden organisations, garden clubs, garden societies. There's a wonderful initiative called Incredible Edible, and it was started in Bristol and finding little community patches for growing gardens, and it's become very successful. And it's not just about people who need the help with garden societies. How about if you're a keen gardener and you contact them and say, not how can you help me, but how can I help you? As many of them will be, do a fundraiser of an open day and a plant sale next year, and they would be very grateful for some small plants. They would be very happy if people would spend just a few hours showing newbie gardeners what to do. Somebody who might have some spare timber, could they donate that to make raised beds? All sorts of things you can do. And if we all helped each other, then the success just grows and grows. The Royal Horticultural Society has some wonderful initiatives on school gardens and growing for therapy as well. Contact your local nursery. If you could help them in some way, could they donate a few plants to you? We don't want something for nothing, but it's amazing how people will be very generous when it comes to initiatives.
Those listening to this will have probably recognised that naturally the summer is drawing to a close, and soon the cold, darker days with a reduction of colour in our gardens will be here. The winter period can be a very challenging time for those with mental illnesses. Do you have any advice for people who struggle in the winter months?
It is tough, and if you're working, quite often you leave the house in darkness and don't get back till after dark, and you simply don't see your garden or even have any outdoor and daylight on your face until the weekend. So if you have a garden, then just get out, lift your face up, even if it's raining, take some deep breaths, have a look and see what's going on. If you have a well-designed garden, you'll at least have some form, some evergreen plants, calm repose of the grass, the borders, nicely mulched, the hedges properly trimmed. Even if it's a grey sky lashing down with rain, it can still give you 2 minutes out there with your coat on. And it just de-stresses you. It is not a favourite time of year, and I've actually identified the time of year. And actually, I don't really want to do any gardening. I'm happy now to be a part-time gardener and garden for 9 months of the year. And I've pinpointed it to doing all the tasks I need to do before bonfire night. And nearly all of them, if I haven't done them by then, they can wait till after Valentine's Day. All the winter work can be done in late October, early November, when the soil is still warm. You can pick it up in February, and that's the time that the snowdrops have started to come out, and you start to take an interest in all the little bulbs coming up, and your desire to garden is then more enthusiastic. But of course, the articles are written by people who must edit magazines 12 months of the year, and their books are written by professionals who garden and manage teams of gardeners 12 months a year. So there's always, you know, what to do in the garden here, what to do in the garden this month. But you don't have to. It can wait. It's amazing the number of jobs that are okay to be done when you're in the mood, when you've got the time, and when it's a lovely day like today.
And I suppose there's jobs that people can do indoors as well, aren't there?
Well, I find that the gardening year starts for me in September when I'm planning what to grow for next year. In November, I'm planting my garlic. The first week in January, once we've got all the Christmas and New Year over, I'm thinking of sowing my shallots. I'm looking through the seed catalogues. In February, I would be starting off my tomatoes and leek plants. So there's never nothing to do.
Thank you for taking the time to speak to me today, Kathy. I really appreciate your time and your guidance, and I'm sure our listeners will really enjoy that. Oh, thank you.
It's been an absolute blast and a pleasure as always.
I think it is important during this time to provide our listeners with a variety of different resources that they can explore regarding the positive benefits between mental health and gardening. Hopefully our discussion today has broadened your perspective and planted the seed, if you like, for further individual investigation. The RHS website, accessed at www.rhs.org.uk, hosts a wide range of articles for those interested in gardening, regardless of whether you are just starting out or are a veteran gardener. They are actively discussing the benefits of the new policy initiative of social prescribing. Mind, the mental health charity, accessed at www.mind.org.uk, offers advice and support. One of their pages is titled Nature and Mental Health, which explores the topic of this interview further with more suggestions and ideas. The charity Thrive, www.thrive.org.uk, has an accessible website outlining the benefits of social and therapeutic horticulture. This charity helps not only those who suffer mentally, but also those with a disability or long-term health condition. If we've learned anything over the past few months, it's to stay connected, keep the mind active, and most importantly, to get outdoors gardening.